I'm Mark Strassman, producer and host of BookChat.org. We're in almost Beverly Hills today talking to Harriet Rubin, who's just written Soloing, Realizing Your Life's Ambition. Welcome to Book Chat.
Thank you, Mark. Great to be with you.
The process that produced Soloing is the process that you discuss in Soloing, isn't it?
It is. I left a wonderful job, so-called. At least my friend said it was the best job in publishing. I left it after 10 years in it. And the reason I left was because I wanted to pursue my own life's ambition, which was to write. And so, in a way, the book is very much modeled after Thoreau's Walden, because he left a crummy civil service job on July 4th, Independence Day, 1845, and he decided to move to Walden Pond. Well, my Walden Pond was my apartment, and from there I learned to be independent.
I understand that Thoreau took his laundry back to his mother to wash it. Did you have support from others in your efforts to declare your independence?
No one washed my clothes but me. And I also mailed my own letters and wrote all my own requests for clients. I did everything myself. I did it deliberately, in the same way that Picasso, before he painted anything, mixed his own pigments. You know, there's something, when you become a manager, you lose the touch and feel of work. There's no direct contact with your actual labor. And so it becomes an ordeal. But when you're responsible for everything up and down the line, you take pride in every detail. And that's what I learned to do.
How did you decide on soloing as the term to describe this phenomenon is, instead of some other possible alternatives?
Well, soloing is very different from the other common term, freelancing. Freelancers, for example, if I had been freelance, I would have left publishing but still edited from my apartment or on my own. Instead, I wanted to follow an old childhood dream that I had repressed for too long. Now, the term soloing was really invented by George Gendron, who's the editor-in-chief of Inc. magazine. And he invented it at a time when he said to me about 2 years ago, he said, for 5 years, everybody I had met was walking around with a business plan in his back pocket. And suddenly now everybody is walking around with an exit plan, and they all want to leave organizations, and they all want to go out on their own.
Could you relate this rather contemporary phenomenon of soloing with the longer standing American trait of individualism bordering on extreme individualism?
Oh, yes, we're a nation of individuals. I mean, Thoreau was ultimately thrown in jail when he left Walden Pond because he decided not to pay his taxes. He didn't like the way the government was run. But we see this this devout individualism even now in someone like Jesse Ventura, who is effective because he's not part of an institution. And we think that he's an honest man because he speaks in his own voice, because he's not anybody's flack.
That's the first paragraph with Henry David Thoreau and Jesse Ventura in it. I don't know if it'll be the last. I think it was actually opposition to the Mexican-American War that inspired Thoreau not to pay his taxes, rather a general disgust with the government, although I'm sure he may have had some of that as well. Could you say a little bit about the outside trends, the major social and economic trends that are encouraging or necessitating soloing?
Yes, well, soloing is not just an opportunity now, it's an imperative. So many of us work in jobs we think are secure, but we show up one day, we're the master of our own fate, and then the next day we're reporting to a 16-year-old. Or we find that we just can't work anymore for a drooling lunatic who goes by the name of boss. You know, work-life changes, organizations are changing left and right, so we're all going to have to learn to solo. But there's something more that's happening, which is the Internet. The Internet is sort of the sledgehammer that's breaking down the Berlin Wall of organizations. Now, for the first time, individuals can be competitive with organizations. They can make a living totally on their own, and a better living at that.
It's interesting that you said that, be competitive with organizations. Irwin William Thompson wrote a book called Passages About Earth maybe 20 years ago, in which he said exactly that. It was pretty much before the advent of the Internet, that the basic functions in society that used to require huge organizations to perform them will, with better technology, be performable by individuals.
That's true. And you know where he got that idea from? Well, even an earlier thinker named Marshall McLuhan. Now, Marshall McLuhan didn't know about the internet, but he did what he called automated labor. He said would be highly individualistic. And he said that people would not in the 1990s, at the turn of the century, they would not be earning a living, they would be learning a living. So what we find is in these information businesses, it really pays to be on your own and learn a living.
Good old Marshall McLuhan. What are the signs that someone sitting in their cubicle may be experiencing right before the desire to solo becomes overwhelming?
Well, I think the first signs that you're ready to walk out the door is that you start, everything about your work just begins to irritate you. And you know what? You become an irritant to others because it's clear you're not in your job for the long haul. Another symptom is that you start dreaming. You know, you start having these dreams where authorities are coming after you. Geraldine Laybourne, who founded Oxygen Media, said that when she was working for the Disney company, she would have dreams where she was being suffocated, and she woke up screaming, "Oxygen, oxygen!" So your dreams will tell you a little bit, but also you start to imagine a better life on the outside. And once you begin to imagine what that will be like, you really start following that dream.
You mentioned somewhere that there's a, you don't use the word synergy, but that there's a valuable opportunity in soloing where you're allowed to work in multiple fields simultaneously or sequentially. Instead of just being the narrow specialist for some minute part of a giant organization, you can not only do all parts of a job, as you were saying, but also all parts of several jobs.
This is very true, and this goes to the heart of what McLuhan said when he talked about learning a living. I often take on projects where I know only a tiny bit of what I will be doing, what the outcome will be. For example, I have to now build a website for a company. All I know, I know how to write, I know about words, but I don't know the first thing about websites. Everything about this job is going to be learning. And this is only one part of what I do. This is the beauty of soloing. You don't have to have all the answers anymore. You can just spend your life learning on other people's money.
In The Insider, which I saw just recently, Lowell Bergman, who's about to go solo off of CBS, says, when I call and say, I'm Lowell Bergman, 60 Minutes, they return my calls. If I call and say, I'm Lowell Bergman, they don't. What happens to people who solo who have that institutional clout when they're beforehand but don't anymore?
This was one of my biggest fears on leaving the organization. And what I found was that, yes, a lot of people didn't return my calls, but then again, a lot of people did. And, you know, the people who didn't return my calls, I was just as happy as I could be not to talk to them. Because if all they wanted was the institution, then they didn't need me. Now, I do have a friend, however, who has a very ingenious, even devilish way of getting people to return his calls. He calls and says to the secretary, "Tell Mr. So-and-so it's his doctor on the phone with his test results."
And that could probably only work about once with each person. You didn't go solo out of desperation. You had an exciting and very successful corporate career before that. Could you just briefly wrap that up for us?
I was a publisher. I founded my own imprint called Currency Books. We published some of the best and brightest business thinkers in the country, including Andy Grove, who's the CEO of Intel, and Dee Hock, the founder of Visa. But you know, you say I wasn't desperate, but I was desperate, emotionally desperate. I had to get out. I couldn't stand this suffocating environment anymore. And when I left, I took my Rolodex with me. But you know what? I didn't use the Rolodex even once because I had to create whole new ties, whole new set of clients. It was a very different world, and it was very difficult at first, but more than worth the effort.
Well, when I'm preparing for an interview, I start seeing signs of it all around. And in fact, there was a commercial which I'd seen many times already, which shows some children reciting these dead-end positions that they might reach in the corporate world. And it looks kind of funny. And then at the end, the tagline, of course, is come to our website and get a good freelancing job. Is there kind of a current about soloing running through the zeitgeist now?
There is. It's helped by the internet, but what the IRS has said is that there's a huge increase, a 20% increase in people filing their tax returns as sole practitioners. And if you look around at some of the major figures in our culture, I mean, look, for the first time, Bill Clinton is going to be without an institution, most likely. He's going to be solo. There are a lot, Jack Welch, who's retiring from GE, solo. You know, Bill Gates, I'm going to be sending him a copy of my book. He may, in the breakup of Microsoft, turn out to be a soloist. So there, it's very much in the zeitgeist, as you say.
Say a little bit more about the effect of the web as an inciter and as a facilitator for soloing.
Well, if you're working at home in your bunny slippers, you can be every bit as important as Coca-Cola on the internet. I mean, no one knows if you're working alone with the new technology. You can create a voicemail system so that you sound like you've got a whole battalion of people, you know, with you. Size doesn't matter anymore in terms of doing great work, and there are more and more clients who want great work, and they perceive that great work can only come from an individual and not from a big institution.
I got the image as you were saying that of one person in bunny slippers and another person in a muumuu, each generating this image of themselves as a huge mega corporation, but actually being one person each. So, as for the financial aspects of this, there's a woman named Michelle Mitchell who I interviewed about a year ago for her book about young people in politics, who was on NPR yesterday afternoon, talking about this subject more or less. And her final line was, "How can I take myself public?" What are the financial implications for people who solo?
Well, you have to give up the notion of a steady paycheck, but what I have found with every soloist I've spoken to, is that they're actually earning more by doing what they love because they do great work. But, for example, if you're going to go solo, what you might want to think about doing a year before you leave your job is to begin to look, really study your budget, and maybe think about ways of cutting it by a third, just in case you have to stake yourself over a period of time. It helps to have some savings, but in the long run, you can't really say, once I reach dollar amount X, it'll be safe for me to solo. Because once you cut off your ties to the corporate world, you are flying on your own. And you can never truly anticipate what you're going to encounter. Better just to do it. If I have one regret after 10 years at Doubleday, my one regret about soloing is that I didn't do it sooner. I'd be a lot better off now.
Say something about how soloing can help eliminate the work/life dichotomy.
Well, when you do what you love, you both vacation on the job because it doesn't feel like a strain and a sacrifice. And yet, by the same token, you work all the time. I mean, really, it's just you supporting you if you're also single and solo. So it requires a lot of effort, but it doesn't feel like effort. In fact, I work all the time, and the only time I really want to stop is when I kind of can't keep my eyes open anymore.
Again, though, I want to get your feeling about whether this is an approach for everyone because of the added responsibility, the added risk, the fact that for many people, having less of a dichotomy between life and work is good, but for other people, they want to have their work in an alienated mode and finish it at the end of the day and then use some sort of inebriant and then be at leisure. They don't want to be on call 24 hours a day and so on. What do you say about that problem or solution?
Well, it's true that some people, because of various situations, they need the structure of a job. They need the constant benefits. But I think most people in this world really would find themselves far better off because each of us has something we love to do. And if we wait and wait and wait, we'll find ourselves, you know, 6 feet under or just about there and thinking, why didn't I take the risk when I could have had the chance? We only get one life.
Okay, well, that's from the individual perspective. From the social perspective, let's say everyone goes out and buys your book and hands it to someone else, although, of course, if they all buy it, there'll be no one else to hand it to. But and they all decide to go solo. No, tomorrow, everybody quits, and everybody does this. Would that be a sustainable economic scenario for the country?
Well, this very community we're talking in, more or less Hollywood runs by a principle where about maybe half the population are solo, they're stars, they're producers, they're directors, and the other half work in organizations and corporations. I think we need a mix of both. It's not as though everybody's gonna you know, fly the coop, but the people who really have this great talent can create more wealth and more great products if they're free of organizations. Organizations will have to learn to respect talent outside of its borders.
Well, you're very right about that. I mean, Hollywood is the archetypal community like that, especially since the breakup of the studio system in the 50s, so that everyone is freelancing except sort of for people in unions and the people who work for the studios. And it is a highly, in a sense, intellectual, if not intellectual, intellectual property-oriented mini-economy, because it's producing intellectual property in the form of films. But I'm wondering whether that's a model that's applicable to the vast rest of the economy, or in fact, Silicon Valley's that way, Hollywood's that way, California is therefore largely that way. Is that something that's going to remain particular here, or is that a model for the rest of the country and the rest of the world, do you think?
I think it's a model for the rest of the world, because the internet is making us all individuals. But you know, I've heard from soloists in various parts of the Midwest who are setting up retail boutiques on the web, working mothers who just need to be home, who are going solo and starting up their online businesses or small retail businesses. This is a solution for everybody who just can't abide by corporate rules. Now, what is corporate America going to do? Well, I think corporate America will be enriched for it. You know, when the Japanese first came on the scene in the early 80s, the corporations studied them and began to use their principles. Well, maybe corporations need to be run a little more in the way that soloists manage their business.
Well, so what you're saying is that, the response, if people start flooding out the door, will be to give the same autonomy within the corporation as people would get by getting out, and you end up with a kind of, that's sort of the free market in employment structures, and the corporations would have to respond that way, meaning that the process of soloing under possibly another name, under loose management or something, would become the general rule.
I think you've said it very well, and that's what I can imagine happening, that corporations will still be powerful, some of them, but the corporations that cater to information, talent, creativity, selling, and service, I think they're going to be more and more in the hands of soloists or corporations that understand what autonomy is about.
And in fact, those corporations that do a good job of soloizing themselves will do better than ones that don't, and so on. So in fact, what you're talking about is the social and employment dimension of how new information technology, particularly the internet, makes possible new arrangements.
Yes, it's how it makes possible a new individualism and total self-reliance.
Which was a name of a book by Ralph Waldo Emerson, the good friend and a longtime supporter of Henry David Thoreau, which brings us full circle, and let me wrap it up this way. All of these mentions of Thoreau, of course, put me in mind of the 60s when he was a popular, iconic figure. I recently attended a conference here in L.A. where James Q. Wilson spoke, and at the end he gave, as he always does, a dig to the 60s, and he said people now can just do their own thing. And I got into a little discussion with him afterwards, in which I made the argument that the own thing he was talking about was the corporate thing. People would buy corporate food and wear corporate clothes and see corporate movies and so on. And that's what he was really talking about. And he sort of, well, his wife had some common sense. He kept defending his own position. What I want to ask you at the end here is, do you think that what you're talking about here is really a realization in highly developed economic terms of some of the ideals of the 60s of autonomy and self-determination and doing without or working against the power of big institutions?
Well, I think there are elements of the 60s in this movement, yes, but, you know, this movement is much older than us, than the kids of the 60s. It goes back to Thoreau, but then Thoreau was only echoing some of the romantic ideals of William Wordsworth. You know, where was the birthplace of individualism? I'm not enough of a scholar to know, but I know that it certainly predates us, and it will become increasingly the mode of operation. The world is moving more and more towards individual expression in everything, and we all want to be artists, and soloing is a way to be the artist of your own craft.
In fact, then, what you're talking about is techno-romanticism, something that's both expresses all these individualistic feelings, while at the same time is underpinned by an advanced technology.
Yes, I love that phrase, actually. Great.
Well, you can use it, or I'll use it in the next book. Well, thank you very much, Harriet Rubin, for talking to us about soloing, realizing your life's ambition.
Mark, it's a pleasure to be in conversation with you.